This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode, Make Way. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have a disability, a doctor will likely diagnose you and treat you. You'll have lots and lots of interactions with medical professionals over the course of your life. But have you ever met a doctor who has a disability? I haven't, or at least not that I know of. Doctors are expected to be perfect, right? Superhumans of sorts, really smart, physically fit, ready to work around the clock and perform miracles every day. But more and more current and aspiring doctors say this narrative is a disservice to providers and to patients. Can they change the culture? Alana Gordon reports.
When Stacey Jones got to med school, she was prepared to struggle. She'd always been aware in the back of her mind that certain aspects of academics were tough for her. She figured she'd just have to work even harder. She had made it all the way to Harvard Medical School. But that work just even harder strategy didn't work out so well.
I basically almost failed a lot of my classes. And I just during that time felt very ashamed and I felt very lonely.
She'd avoid professors, terrified that they were thinking she was lazy. The summer after her first year, in 2015, Stacey went to get evaluated. She realized she had a learning disability and ADHD.
It was very validating when my neuropsychologist actually sat down with me and said, Stacey, you're smart. You know, like, Stacey, like, look at all of these things that your brain does well. It must be so frustrating that, you know, when you read or when you listen to lectures, like, your brain's not processing language in the same way.
It was a relief to hear that, but it also wasn't a relief.
Because I think there is this perception in medical education and in the culture in general of not really admitting vulnerabilities and not admitting, like, disability isn't a word that I often heard spoken.
That's because disability hasn't been something that's talked about a lot. When it comes to medicine, doctors often like to think of themselves as the fixers. Not the ones who are ever in need of care.
This profession historically has viewed themselves as able-bodied in the extreme.
Lisa Iazzoni is very familiar with this culture.
I am a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and the director of the Mangan Institute Health Policy Center at the Massachusetts General Hospital.
She uses an electric wheelchair or scooter to get around, and you have to really sprint to keep up with her.
Oh my God, you really are going fast.
She likes to move at rabbit speed.
There's the rabbit right there, and there's the turtle.
There's a literal rabbit and a turtle on your scooter.
Yes, there are little tiny images of a rabbit and a turtle. And rabbit is fast.
In the early 80s, when Lisa was in medical school at Harvard herself, she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. She wasn't in a wheelchair then, but she had been experiencing a lot of shadowy symptoms, like a sudden loss of sensation in a limb. So she had to be mindful of flare-ups. Her advisors knew this. They treated her differently for it, as did just about everyone else.
When I scrubbed in on a surgery one time, the surgeon at a kind of slack time during the operation turned to me and said, do you want my opinion about whether you should become a doctor? And what am I going to say? I'm a third-year medical student. I said, certainly, Dr. So-and-so. I'd be happy to hear your opinion. And he then opined that I had no right to go into medicine because I lacked the most important quality in medicine, and that was 24/7 availability. And so during the rest of the clerkship, the residents almost didn't talk to me. I was beneath their notice because their attending had told them that I had no right to be in medicine.
That wasn't the end of it. Lisa remembers then meeting a prominent doctor from an affiliated hospital and asking about her future options.
And he paused for a second, kind of steepled his fingers, and then he looked back at me and he said, there are too many doctors in the country right now for us to worry about training a handicapped physician. If that means some people get left by the wayside, so be it. That was pretty stunning.
Lisa didn't become a doctor. She just didn't have the support. But she also didn't leave medicine.
The work that I do is on disparities in healthcare for people with disabilities. And I think that part of the origins of disparities are stigmatizing attitudes.
Lisa is keen on pointing out that her experience in medical school happened 6 years before the Americans with Disabilities Act, or the ADA, passed. The landmark legislation created federal protections for people with disabilities.
Every man, woman, and child with a disability can now pass through once closed doors into a bright new era of equality, independence, and freedom.
In the decades since, amendments and court rulings have clarified those rights to services and supports. But Lisa and others say those changes have been slow to take hold in medicine. Another Lisa, Lisa Meeks, is on a mission to change that.
You know, what we view as absolute is very different now than what it was even 10 years ago. And we owe a lot of that to assistive and adaptive technologies. But also, you know, medicine is an ever-evolving creature.
Lisa Meeks is a psychologist at Michigan Medicine, specializing in disabilities and medical education and the profession at large. Lisa says getting supports is not about getting an easy pass to becoming a doctor. It's the ramp, so to speak, that allows a person to enter the room.
There's no waiver of any sort of skill or competency. The physician has to know what they're doing and has to understand, you know, the clinical knowledge, the same clinical skill as their peers.
But places may just not know how to align what's required to become a doctor with what's reasonable support for aspiring doctors with disabilities, especially in the clinic.
And so I think the saddest thing for me is when people don't know what to do, they don't know what they don't know, and they don't know about the resources available.
Lisa recently co-authored a major disabilities in medicine report. Think of it as a blueprint for best practices with the American Association of Medical Colleges. Jeffrey Young is a director there. Medicine, he says, is having a moment.
We have to do a better job of educating those in the field about, you know, what the potential is for those with disabilities versus what is consumed or assumed to be an automatic inability.
The report featured firsthand interviews and found that many aspiring doctors actually hide their disability out of a real fear of judgment, bias, and skewed perception of ability. Just under 3% of students in medical school have disclosed a disability. That's far fewer than the proportion of people with disabilities in the U.S. or in other graduate programs. But the thing is, doctors with disabilities are out there. Earlier this year, Lisa Meeks had an idea. If doctors with disabilities saw more people like themselves, would they come out of hiding, talking more openly about their challenges and misperceptions? She started a hashtag, Docs with Disabilities. Her goal was to find 20 doctors willing to share their stories. And?
There's no end in sight.
She has been flooded with interest from around the country, from docs with disabilities who wanted to come out of the shadows and challenge what it means to be a doctor and to have a disability.
I'm an anesthesiologist, and I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in July of 2010.
Nicole Taylor is at Wake Forest Medical School in North Carolina.
What I would do in the hospital setting is I had different kinds of glasses.
Kurt Herzer has a genetic retinal disease and is a physician scientist at Oscar Health in New York City.
Some that were essentially like small little telescopes mounted on a pair of glasses.
So I was actually born deaf in one ear.
Erica Dwyer is an internal medicine resident at Cambridge Health in Boston.
I was almost done with medical school and then realized that I was also losing my hearing on the other side, and I started needing technology to sort of help amplify my hearing and to help manage in clinical settings and the like.
I have attention deficit disorder.
Jason Brookman is in Baltimore. He actually published a case study about himself and how he's learned to manage his disability as an anesthesiologist. It hasn't always been easy. Faranmi Okunlami had a spinal cord injury and is partially paralyzed.
People treat me as if I'm an anomaly because I've been able to, quote unquote, achieve despite my disability. And I think that once people see how many people are already out there practicing with disabilities, I think that that will normalize this more.
Faranmi says, sure, he might not be the guy on the ground doing the chest compressions during a code when someone has stopped breathing. But a doctor's more than that.
And very often, that is actually not the role you run. You have to be the person that is deciding what medication to give. You have to make sure that the people doing chest compressions are doing them adequately. You have to think about what could be the reason why this person, you know, stopped breathing or their heart stopped. The tasks required to run a code aren't all just physical tasks.
But these conversations and shifts in medicine are also being driven from a future generation of doctors.
The waters of medical education are inherently turbulent and difficult to navigate. This is especially true for learners with disabilities.
So you could change, like, how fast it goes. You could change the voice and even the language.
Graduate from medical school. What was once relatively unusual has become much more common in medical education.
With text-to-speech, my reading speed increases, like, 3 to 4 times. It's amazing.
Stacey Jones, a medical student, says getting diagnosed with a learning disability after her first year at Harvard Medical School, and then later figuring out what she needed, has made all the difference.
It's not just, okay, I can read faster now. You know, it's actually like allowing me to like take that burden off to actually learn.
Stacey says she struggled sorting all this out after she was first diagnosed and figuring out where to get support. A turning point, though, was when she realized she wasn't alone, that doctors with disabilities are out there, and so are future ones. Last year, she started connecting with other medical students with disabilities from around the country.
We formed this national group out of this idea of destigmatizing disability in medicine and bringing peers together from across the country and Canada.
She and her group say these efforts are not just important for them, but for patients, too. As it stands, research has found that people with disabilities are less likely to get recommended treatments and screenings, like PAP tests. One reason may be that doctors carry biases and don't always understand the nuances of these experiences. And so for students like Stacey, the most able physician of the 21st century is one who has the skills to connect with patients and what they're facing, who can think creatively about how to come up with the best care. Looking ahead, as Stacey completes her own medical training, she's leaning toward working in pediatrics.
I think that when I see patients and families that, you know, like maybe they have a kid who just received this diagnosis and they're sort of receiving this narrative of like, your kid needs help, your kid needs special education, your kid, you know, isn't perfect. Like, I think I have the viewpoint where I could say, like, no, your child is perfect. Your kid is smart. Your kid is capable. This is not a tragedy. Disability is not a tragedy. And I think that's something that is a huge strength that physicians with disabilities can bring to medicine and patient care.
Alana Gordon reported this story.